You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode 473. We are the Fight Disciples, and this is dedicated to the world of boxing. If it's the first time you've ever come across us, please subscribe. You could do that on iTunes. And I've just been having a little bit of a look through some of the comments that people have been leaving us. You're a kind bunch, aren't you? Keep them coming. Helps us with the visibility in the iTunes charts. Thank you very much for the five-star reviews. If you need an Android feed, you can get it on our website, fightdisciples.com, where all our social media feeds are. And there's also a little bit of a link to our shop where we sell merchandise and we sell beer. Although not at the moment, because we've sold out of everything. We are trying our best to restock that shop for you, all right? So fightdisciples.com if you want to get stuck in. You'll be pleased to know that this show, well, half of this show, is being brought to you now by the new world-famous Nick Pete Productions Potting Shed. That's right. He has he's spent all the proper tackle money on upgrading his facilities. He is he's built himself an actual proper studio. No longer is he just sat in his living room chatting to you on a week by week basis. He's gone big time. Look at you. You can tell who the talent is in this duo, can't you?
Proper Billy Big Balls, me. As you can see, brand new facilities.
Yeah.
I'm going to use this today for filming with BT Sport as well, so everyone will get a bit of a visual later in the week.
Oh, yeah.
But, I just thought, at the end of the day, I'm bringing in good money now.
You sound like Broner. You sound like Adrian Broner. Made a few quid selling alcohol. Made a few quid. This is what we're doing.
I think I've moved on from putting the laptop on top of a pile of books, on top of a coffee table,
yeah,
and sitting on the sofa and continually moving around the sofa because the sunlight comes directly through the front windows and all that kind of business. And I just thought, you know what? I'm gonna invest in me. I'm going to build me a home studio, which is not
All right, LeBron. LeBron's here now.
Yeah, man. Just need to get a few decorations up, get the old photographs in and make it homely. But yeah, look what I've got here for me seat.
Go on.
Got me UFC Fight Island. Welcome to my Abu Dhabi. Days.
Mate, you've taken that off the back of a seat in the aeroplane. You've ripped merch off from parts of the world that you've been to and you're sticking it up in your room, are you?
Exactly. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
You've gone full Joe Rogan on me. That's what you've done, mate. You've gone big time. I'm still sat in my mum's basement doing the show on a week-by-week basis. Well, it's my basement, but you get the gist. Look at that, eh? But I'm very jealous. Looks good, man. Looks good. Fingers crossed, when COVID's gone, that could be weekly
HQ. There
you go. Exactly. Get yourself into the potting shed. Looking mint. To be fair, that's probably the most remarkable thing to talk about in the world of boxing from the weekend, because it was very unremarkable, weren't it? We can't have it all our own way every single week. The week previous, we were sat here knocking one out for fun, weren't we? We saw Oscar Valdez doing the bit against Miguel Burchell. We saw the fantastic matchroom card. There were fights all over the world that we were just going crazy for. The matchmaking was absolutely outstanding, yeah? We were high as kites saying that boxing's the greatest sport in the world. Fast forward 7 days. Oh, mate. If anybody did, if you, I don't know, maybe you got involved in a Zoom quiz with your mates at the weekend, so you missed out on the boxing, right? And you thought, I'll go listen to the Fight Disciples Monday morning because the lads will tell me what fights to go back and watch. Don't bother. Don't bother. There's literally nothing to see. Nout. Nothing at all.
Nah. And do you know what? We had a plethora of shows as well. Obviously, we were Saturday morning straight up with our Coco Pops ready for Joe Parker and Junior Farr. Mm. And then that, well, I watched it in here actually, but I was just finishing off the old
right,
the new
show
HQ.
Off. I watched it in my new studio.
And then obviously Saturday night, we had the makeshift, and it was a makeshift card. I feel for everyone involved at Queensbury because that card at the Copper Box on Saturday night,
yeah,
you know, it was hanging on like grim death, wasn't it? But they didn't help themselves with some of the matchmaking. And then we had obviously it's hard, the that complete one, mismatch.
Just on that one, it is tough, right? They booked a world title fight that fell off 10 days out, and then the core men for the world title fight fell off, what were it, 3 days out? The kid failed his COVID test. And that was the fight. That was the solid fight. Nobody else. Everything else was supposed to be showcasing the talent off the back of those two fights. And when you lose your two main ones within a 10-day period, fuck me, man. What can you do? What can you... Yeah. Like you say, you feel for everybody at Queensbury, everybody at BT. The lads got work, but we knew going into it that it weren't going to be one of them where they were all going, oh, this is amazing. It was just a case of just keeping the show on the road. So, like you say, you feel for everybody that was connected to that.
Yeah. And then obviously we rolled into Miami then for Matchroom's big arrival. And you know what? The best thing about the Miami show was the ring walk. Yeah. At least we got
a
world-class, remarkable ring walk.
That's a bit of you.
I remember the old Naz days, sitting ringside covering Naz fights when he came in on fucking flying carpets and dancing through graveyards and everything else.
Mm.
I love a ring walk, and I love the fact that Eddie's embracing the old ring walk as well. So the highlight of the weekend for me, one, I was super jealous watching Joe Parker and Junior Farr in front of 10,000 Kiwis who were fucking absolutely battered on the lash. I was super jealous of that. And then two, I was super jealous. I'd like to have just been in Miami for the ring walk. I quite happily would have walked out the door for the actual fight itself because it played out exactly how we thought it would. But the ring walk, it looked like the atmosphere was wicked.
Listen, I can tell that I'm getting old, right? I'm 40 in 2 months' time. And I used to work in music radio. I used to have my finger on the pulse of all the latest artists because I was playing them. They were on my breakfast show. I was playing them day in, week out, right? That's what was happening. We in 5 seconds of that ring walk, I'm Googling who the fuck J Balvin is. No idea, man. Never heard of you. Who the fuck is that guy? Allegedly, he's pretty big, mate. He's won some Golden Globes. He's done bits. He's big with the kids. Like big with the Latin market. Yeah, massive.
He's like the Latino Dizzy Rascal.
Is that what he is?
He's the Latino Dizzy Rascal, yeah.
There you go. Just in case you wanted a little bit of music knowledge on this show, we've got it there. The Latino Dizzy Rascal walking Canelo to the ring. There was more chance of Canelo getting hurt on the way to the ring than there was actually fighting Avni Yildirim. The amount of bloody pyrotechnics that they splashed out on. I'll tell you something, Eddie's gone for it, hasn't he? Canelo, listen, son, right? We're going to do the Billy fight, but I need to do more afterwards because you're the golden goose. You're the golden goose. I need to do that undisputed fight at the end of the year when you get your hands on Caleb Plant. He went to town on it, didn't he? Jeez. Frank Smith, spunk the budget on the ring walk, son. Just spend it all. Impress the lad. Give him 5th of November. Give him everything he wants. Jesus.
At least now we know that the government have actually been able to make some money back from the fireworks they had prepared for New Year's Eve on London Bridge. Because obviously Eddie's bought job lots. He's bought all them, shipped them over to Miami and just threw the fucking kitchen sink at that ring walk. And you know what? The best thing is you knew it was coming as well because I'd seen an interview with Eddie, obviously after the Callum Smith fight or in the build-up to this fight, basically saying, you know what? The thing with Canelo is he loved the ring walk. The ring walk we did him for Callum Smith, he loved it. And in hindsight, I'm like, you know what? Look at Canelo's history. He always fights in Vegas. They don't do ring walks in Vegas. One of the ring walks, he just basically ended up in the ring without even any music. And just then you could see Eddie's little eyes lighting up.
Yeah.
And you knew he was going to absolutely fucking spunk the budget on a ring walk. And he did, man. And you know what? It was fucking glorious. And I know Eddie would have been standing ringside in his tight fat of slacks with a semi on, just thinking, fucking, I've got you now, son.
I've got
you, me little ginger Mexican, you're mine now. Because Canelo would have loved it again, man. Of course he would have.
It was like watching, do you know the halftime show at Super Bowl? Which, when the game's pretty shit. That's what that was. We got a pre-fight Super Bowl performance from that Dizzy Rascal. And next thing you know, we get a 3-round, one-sided piece of nonsense that we kind of all expected. There's nothing really to say.
What I am looking forward to now, obviously we'll come on to the fight in a circle. It wasn't a fight, was
are
it?
We? Are we going to talk about
9 minutes of 9 minutes of something? But what excites me most is Eddie's gone bigger again for this ring war. So by the time May the 8th rolls around and Canelo faces Billy Joe, I reckon he's gonna get Danny Boyle in like we did for the London 2012 Olympics.
Yes.
I reckon it's gonna be like a fucking mental like Game of Thrones. They're gonna have dragons flying into the arena and fucking, you know, Billy Joe on the top of a double decker bus, like George Groves or Carl Froch. Didn't one of them do the double decker bus
George
at Groves. Wembley?
Yeah, but he's gotta come in brilliant. On a caravan. He's gotta come in his caravan, hasn't he? That's what he's gotta come in on.
Oh yeah. No, just in a white transit van, just fucking with the lads in. Billy Joe jumps out, white vest on, fucking, basically, you know, cap on, the full nine
you're
yards.
You're going for Brad Pitt snatch. That's what you're going for, are you?
That'd be absolutely unreal.
Nice.
Unreal, but listen, that's it now. Eddie has popped the cork on ring walks again.
Yeah.
We are going back to the Naz era. It will get bigger. It will get better. Roll on May the 8th. It's going to be fucking bonkers.
Big fan. I don't know if you saw Maurizio Sulaiman's post-fight interview with the lovely lads at IFL who are out there covering it, doing great work. But he concluded that they need to look at their mandatory situation because he expected a better fight. You what? The whole world told you pre-fight that you need to look at the mandatory situation. What are you talking about this now? For me, right, and we've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks. In fact, we've been saying it for years. And it's not just the WBC. There's other situations in there as well. We saw Sarah Mecca fighting Golovkin recently, didn't we, as the IBF mandatory, which was absolutely ridiculous. The Yildirim thing at the weekend kind of was the cherry on top of the cake, where you've got a guy coming off a loss 2 years out, and he's fighting the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world as a mandated fight, which is absolutely ridiculous. Mandatories are now getting a bad rep, aren't they? Everybody's slagging him. Everybody's having a go at him. There should be the best fighter in the world that doesn't have a world title. That's what a mandatory should be. That's what the mandatory should be, right? You've got to have beaten top 10 fighters. You've got to have beaten top 5 fighters, right? Otherwise, you cannot be a mandatory. This really does need to be looked at because it's ruining the sport. And although we commend Canelo's activity and his actions this year of wanting to obviously go through everybody and become the first ever undisputed super middleweight champion of the world. I know that that's a ridiculous stat, that there's never been one, but that's what he wants to achieve. The reason why we got Yildirim at this particular point is only because Canelo speeded it up. He's the one that went, I want him, let's do it now, let's get it out the way, because I know it's a shit fight, let's just do it. I want to keep the belt, so let's bin him out the way and then I can move on towards the Billy Joe Saunders fight. Remember, Canelo fought in December, mate. He fought in December against Callum Smith. That was a tough fight. How many other champions are doing that? So now, in order to get to speed up the process of shit mandatories, the stress has gone on to the fighter. No, man. The game has to change because not everybody's got the same attitude as Canelo. Not everybody's going to be doing what Canelo's doing. The game has to change to make it more acceptable it needs to change its attitude towards mandatory challenges, because it can't be just, he hasn't had a turn, let's give him a turn. It can't be that. It's got to be the best guy in the world or girl in the world that has not currently got a world title. That's what the mandatory should be.
The crazy thing is, you know, 20 years ago, when I first fucking started out in this game, and like you were covering world champions or people on the verge of being world champions and everything else, that was mandatory and voluntary were the fucking golden words around every conversation with fighters and their managers and their coaches, because you were praying for a voluntary so you could pick someone out the top 10 and have a nice defense and whatever it may be. And when the word mandatory came up, everyone was like, oh, fucking hell, got to fight the mandatory guy now. Oh, shit, this is going to be tough. And, you know, you knew it was a fucking real fight. Somewhere over the last 20 years, those roles have switched.
Yeah.
Now it's like the champions want, the mandatories they're choosing are tougher. The voluntaries they're choosing are tougher than the mandatories that the governing bodies are ordering. And there's only one reason that's happened. That's because the governing bodies, all of the governing bodies, not one of them is free of this, but all of the governing bodies are corrupt. They are corrupt organizations that are making decisions to please them and to line their pockets. it never kind of never used to be that way, because when these governing bodies were first, you know, WBO has only been around since the 80s, for instance. So people wouldn't have stood for that shit back then. People would come, ah, you're a fucking joke. But somehow they've all kind of fell down the same trap of, oh, this guy's been in our ranking system for a long time, so he deserves to be pushed up the rankings. Like Yildirim, you know, yes, there was a little bit of controversy because of the cut and all that with Durrell, but he still lost the fight with Durrell. He fought 10 rounds or whatever it was, and he lost on the scorecards. Just because that fight ended because of a head clash suffered early in the fight, that doesn't come away from the fact that he lost the fight over 10 rounds. That doesn't mean he stays high in the rankings for 2 years without having a fight. WBC have got to take ownership of that shit, and they're all just as bad. And this is why this year, our entire campaign, we keep mentioning hashtag bin the belts, because we need to keep pushing that narrative. Because yes, you know, and I completely agree with you. I commend Canelo, because Canelo's trying to do something that's never been done before. He's trying to unify every single belt at 168 pounds. To do that, he's got to have all the belts. Yeah. Now, I believe, and I've said this previously, I believe Canelo, with his star power, he could have said to Sullivan, he could have said to the WBC, strip me or shut the fuck up. He's probably one of the few fighters that could have said that. And I believe they'd have gone, oh, yeah, okay, then you can keep the belt. But he hasn't done that. He's played the game with them and gone, you know what? I'll stay busy, man. Throw that motherfucker in with me in between fights, straight into Billy Joe and May. He announced it at the weekend. I commend that. And the way he's talking is, once he beats Canelo, he's adamant he's going to fight Caleb Plant before the end of the year, which means in a calendar year, inside a 12-month period, Canelo, if all goes to plan, will have had four fights against three of the world champions in the weight division. And that shit is throwback stuff. That shit doesn't happen no more. Canelo's on board. Canelo is on board with us. Boxing needs to get better. And Canelo's driving that narrative.
Yeah, listen, man. Fingers crossed. Like you say, his attitude this year will hopefully then inspire others to go, yeah, man, I need to be more like that, because we, hopefully more media outlets like ourselves, more fans like ourselves start saying, yeah, that's the guy. That's what we want to see. We want to see this shit. This is what we want to see more of. And therefore, fighters then start putting pressure on their promoters, who then start putting pressure on the governing bodies and the television channels and all those types of things, in order for us to get to a place where we're actually happy with the fights that we're getting. Because at the weekend, man, I'm watching that and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is horrific. It's absolutely horrific. 9 minutes of just... The minute he threw anything of any note, he got bingoed, didn't he? He got clipped right on the whiskey. He didn't have it. He was so far out of his depth. In fact, it was uncomfortable how far out of his depth he was. Now, listen, I don't begrudge anybody earning coin. We're going to talk about Triller in a minute, about people earning coin. Yeah. I don't begrudge that. But again, I just want to revert back to something that we did about 3-4 months ago. We're diminishing what it means to become world champion and what it means to become the mandatory challenger in the world of boxing. It should be the best of the best. Not everybody can achieve it. There's plenty of top footballers out there that don't go on to win the World Cup or don't go on to win trophies. Plenty of them, loads of them. We could list loads of guys that didn't win the World Cup. One of them's called Lionel Messi, right? He's probably, for everybody, maybe the best that's ever been. I don't know. It's your argument on that one. It's not supposed to be easy to become a world champion or to become a mandatory challenger. We're not supposed to be dishing out paydays just because we feel sorry for dudes. Yeah, Yildirim made, what, a couple of million quid? Fair play to him. Fair play to him for doing that. But he should never have been in that situation. There should be other people in there that have earned that situation to get to the very top of the tree. And I just hope that maybe Canelo's attitude this year is starting to inspire the change. Fingers crossed. We will continue with our campaign of binning all the fucking belts, and we might get there eventually.
Yeah, that's what we want Canelo to do, you know. We want Canelo to end the year with every single belt at 12 stone. And then, again, Game of Thrones it, man. Just fucking melt them all into one big belt. Melt them all into one big star-shaped belt. Stick them on a wall and go, right, I've fucking done this division now. None of the other belts exist, and I'll back them 100%. And hopefully the winner of AJ Fury does exactly the same thing. Mm. Just on that fight as well, I've seen a lot of people comparing Avni Yildirim to Rocky Fielding as well, because obviously Rocky went to New York, lost the fight in 3 rounds. I think that's completely unfair. The difference there was Avni Yildirim, as we just pointed out, had no business being in the ring with Canelo. He's done nothing in his entire career
yeah.
to to make him a viable opponent for Canelo Alvarez. The difference is Rocky Field, and whether you rank his WBA belt as a full world title or not, he went to Germany, he knocked out Tyron Zuzu, was undefeated at the time, and looked like a rising superstar to lift that WBA belt. So Rocky, and listen, did Canelo Alvarez see him as easy prey with that big long torso? Yeah, he probably did. But in winning, in going to Germany and taking a fight that no one wanted and lifting a belt, Rocky Phelan justified himself as an opponent for Canelo Alvarez moving up to 12 stone for the very first time. So mm-hmm. I think that's completely unfair to make that comparison. Rocky Phelan deserved to be in there with a moving up Canelo. Avni Yildirim, fuck me. He had absolutely no business whatsoever being in that ring. And it's embarrassing that he was in there for 9 minutes. And I don't even think he didn't throw a single backhand punch. He threw nothing but jabs, and I don't think a single jab landed. That's how one-sided and embarrassing it was.
Nice holiday for Canelo anyway in Miami. Just had to nip out for 9 minutes whilst he took care of his mandatory and he could get back to the beach and the pina coladas. Fair play to him. We roll on to May the 8th, because straight after, they announced that it would be Billy Joe Saunders unifying that super middleweight division. Bit disappointing that Billy wasn't out there, but I spoke to Frank Smith, the CEO of Matchroom, on Saturday night. He said, listen, it's just travel restrictions. Billy wanted to be there. We wanted Billy to be there. But in order for him to come, he'd have had to have been in quarantine for a period of time in order to get stuff done. And he's in camp. He's already started working towards May the 8th in this fight with Canelo, as you would imagine. I saw that Billy took to social media on Sunday morning with his apron and his dildo dangling from the apron, just being Billy Joe Saunders, doing Billy Joe Saunders things. Anybody that's listened to this show for the full duration, if you've been here since day dot, you'll know my thoughts on Billy Joe Saunders. I think he's one of the most talented fighters in the world. I think he's got all the skills in the world to make this a proper fight. He's a slick southpaw that creates angles. And that, for me, is the method that you need in order to cause trouble for Canelo. I'm not saying he wins. I'm just saying to cause trouble for Canelo. But as we keep saying, what have we seen in the last 2 to 3 years from Billy Joe Saunders to give us any inclination that it's going to be any different? I can't see it being any different. I think Canelo goes in there and he takes this one and puts it on his mantelpiece and moves on quite comfortably towards Caleb Plant. He might lose some rounds in this fight. You never know. He might lose some rounds, but I can't see him getting beat.
Absolutely no chance he gets beat. And, I kind of put my eggs in one basket with Callum Smith last year. And listen, obviously, in hindsight, it was a crazy idea to think he would beat Canelo.
But you went with size. That's the thing. You look at the Canelo thing, you think the only thing that can beat this guy is if he takes himself out of his comfort zone, and size does him. So you look at Callum and you think, all right, he's got size and he's skillful. There's a chance here. But he was fucking unbelievable that night. Unbelievable, which then makes me question, can he do it even higher? I don't know. But when you come up with someone who's a similar size, hasn't got the physicalities to bully him, then you're obviously relying on a skill set. But Canelo's skill set is ridiculous. He can do it backwards, forwards, and fucking on his head. He's unbelievable.
What Canelo does as well, it's almost we need to accept the fact that it's almost like a Conor McGregor effect in the UFC. People get caught up in the bubble of Canelo. They get caught up in the fact that they're fighting Canelo. And Callum Smith clearly did it because, he just didn't get going in that fight at all. One reason, because Canelo is just so good. But also, did the moment get to him a little bit? It certainly got to Yildirim. It certainly got to Rocky Field. And it gets to fighters. And the only guys we've seen that have won rounds against Canelo in the last few years are people who have been at the very top level and have got a ton of experience. The likes of Golovkin, Danny Jacobs, and even Kovalev won rounds against Alvarez as well. These are guys with incredible experience, used to being at the very top of the sport. Billy Joe, for all his ignorance, I think that might play into Billy Joe's hands because, Billy Joe believes, that's not to say Callum Smith didn't believe he should be at the top level, but I don't think Billy Joe's the deepest of thinkers. I don't think Billy Joe gets caught up in the drama of it all. I think he'll just go in there and just be Billy Joe. But so I doubt he'll get caught in the headlights. But what I will say is that I believe by the time May the 8th comes around, you will have a small pocket of British fans. And I'm not even saying all British fans. I mean a pocket of British fans supporting Billy Joe. And I think the majority of fans globally and a lot of fans in the UK and certainly everyone in America will want to see Billy Joe get knocked the fuck out because of his antics that he's been up to over the last few years. You know, people people don't forget the way he's behaved, Billy Joe, and a lot of people believe his comeuppance is coming. And I think Canelo is going to be a hugely popular fighter on May the 8th. And I think that night could, that whole feeling, that emotion of Billy Joe very much being the heel, could be impactful on the team when they get over there, just how hated he will be.
Listen, it's a proper fight. We're in for it. It's a unification of this division. And like I said, we commend Canelo for pushing these things forward. And Billy Joe's got his chance now. There's been a lot of chat, a lot of talk, tons of talk over God knows how long period of time. And many occasions when you've watched Billy Joe Saunders fights, you've come away from it feeling a little bit deflated, a bit disappointed, a little bit let down. This is it now. Time for talking's done. It's all about walking. May the 8th, venue to be decided. We will keep you up to date with that as and when we get information. You mentioned the Joseph Parker fight, early doors on Saturday morning. the right man won, but 119-109, we're here again, boy. You've upset Terry O'Connor that much. He's emigrated. He's gone to New Zealand. Either that or he's got some relations down there. The Terry O'Connor school of scoring has gone right down to New Zealand. 119-109. God knows how they managed to get to that score, because it was a tight fight. It was a hard fight to score. There's no doubt about that. It was, because it wasn't the most attractive of fights. I personally scored it, well, I was floating between 116, 112, 113, 115 to Joseph Parker. But 119 is just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought the commentary team were getting a bit carried away, you know, with how close they were. They were, you know, insisting it was going into the last. They were like, you know, anyone could win it at this point. I had Parker, you know, comfortably ahead in terms of 2-3. You know, I wouldn't have even been embarrassed by four rounds, but that one judge, that scoring, that's fucking absolutely atrocious. And, you know, I tweeted afterwards on Saturday morning, I was like, fuck me, that guy could almost be British. and I am British, and I'm taking the piss out of us. And you better believe fans around the world will be saying the same thing. Fucking hell. Was that a British judge, was it? Because we are the laughing stock now. We are the country that has the worst judging in boxing. You know, it used to be Germany. You had to go there to get a knockout for the draw. Now fans internationally are talking about Britain being the place you need a knockout for the draw. So it carries weight, that comment, as daft as it was. But the good thing is Joe Parker winning the WBO Oriental Heavyweight title. Jesus Christ. I didn't know Kiwis were Oriental. You know, I thought they were Australasian, but anyway, whatever. The WBO, again, these fucking companies will throw belts at any bollocks. It didn't need a belt, did it? It is what it is. It was the battle for New Zealand. Who's the best boxer coming out of New Zealand? Obviously, Junior Fard had all that amateur experience, and the amateur wins those are Joseph Parker. But Parker very much is a pro now, and, you know, you could see, I think they fight 10 times. I think Joe Parker wins 10 times. In a pro ring, I don't think Junior Farr's aggressive enough. He's too amateur style. But I think a lot of rounds were made close here because Joe Parker was trying to get rid of Junior Farr. He was looking for that knockout. And against a big guy that's obviously got a bunch of amateur experience, unbeaten as a pro. You know, Tony Bellew said to me once, if you get a world-class fighter in there who doesn't want to get knocked out, you know, he won't get knocked out because he knows what he's doing. And that's what Junior Farr was doing for me. He was avoiding being knocked out. He was avoiding the big engaging moments in order to stay in the fight and try and pinch rounds. And he did pinch a couple of rounds. But for me, Joe Parker wins comfortably. We move forward. And, you know, I think Junior Farr has missed a massive opportunity to move on to world level because he very much is an a Kiwi fighter that's stuck in New Zealand because this was his breakthrough moment and he let it slip through his fingers.
Spoke to Derek Chisora on Saturday night. He wants Joseph Parker inside 8 weeks.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm up for it, man. I mean, that fight was originally booked, wasn't it? It was the spider bite that got it off. If you look at where they're all at in their careers right now, nobody's getting a world title shot anytime soon because hopefully we're getting Fury AJ. We'll get that a couple of times. Nobody's getting those knocks. Not even if Dillian, for example, beats Alexander Povetkin. So you look at Joseph Parker's next fight. He's got a good fan base here, Joseph. Derek Chisora, I think, makes an awful lot of sense.
Does make sense. Yeah, absolutely makes sense.
Be interesting to see if they can get that made, especially in that time frame that Derek was talking about. Joe Parker, Derek Chisora, maybe on the horizon. I'm a little bit concerned about Teofimo's relationship with Top Rank, mate. I'm a little bit concerned about it. Before we get into that specific, let's talk about Triller, all right? Because this is really interesting now. We experienced a bit of Triller last year when they got involved with the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. fight. Snoop Dogg was giving it the big one, wasn't he, on the old comms, and we all loved it and fell in love with it. But if we look at that as an entity, that was more of a showbiz. Two vintage fighters coming out of retirement. There was a bit of YouTube and basketballers on the undercard. It was more of a fun thing. It was a white-collar event, in my opinion. Now, they're coming into the real world. They're coming into the real world of boxing. World title fights. We've seen as well that Regis Progress is going over to Triller in order to fight on the Ben Askren, Jake Paul undercard, which is in April. Undercard, I said there, by the way. Former world title holder, undercard. Which kind of gets me thinking of what Triller are going to do with Teofimo Lopez. They've bid big, right? They've gone massive. $6 million for a mandatory fight when the nearest bid to it was $3.5 million. And I thought $3.5 million was big.
Yeah,
it's fucking ridiculous, mate. $6 million. I mean, fair play to Teo and fair play to Jorge Cambosas. Mate, go and spend that red panty money, man. Go and enjoy yourselves, lads, because that is ridiculous, the amount of dough that you're getting for this fight. But from a Triller point of view, and we'll come to Teo in a minute, but from a Triller point of view, I'm really interested to see what they do and how they place this. Do they do it as a standalone fight? Here we go, we've got a world title fight, because their market and their demographic is very young. They're an entertainment platform. Do those people know who Teofimo Lopez is? Are they asked by Teofimo Lopez? If you look at his social followings, he's got 500,000 on Instagram. When you compare that to Ryan Garcia, miles behind, absolutely miles behind. So do they couple that with what we would class as a showbiz fight? Do they put on, I don't know, a guy's coming out of retirement fight? Do they put on Tyson Holyfield? You know what I mean? What do they put on? I think they've got to put some, for them to make their money back and for it to be worthwhile for them, they've got to put something on alongside it, whether it's a co-main or even Tio on the undercard, this is ridiculous, that justifies the demographic and their audience wanting to come to the entertainment platform. Because I don't think this fight does it.
No, it doesn't. And it is really interesting. And if you're the guy at Triller who is out there buying fights or running the boxing division, because as far as I knew, you know, prior to the Tyson Roy Jones fight that they did, Triller is basically like an American version of TikTok, is what is kind of the information I got. And then obviously they did the Tyson Roy Jones thing, obviously showed that they were moving out. But this is completely different. But to bid, you know, DAZN and Eddie Hearn bid $3.5 million and they bid $6.1 million or whatever it is, 0.01 or whatever it was. To outbid the nearest rival by almost fucking 100% means that someone there hasn't got a fucking clue what they're doing. Because, you know, the whole point of bidding is you get, you know, maybe a million more or whatever it may be. Like Top Rank bid 2.3. No doubt Eddie Hearn and DAZN got wind of what they were fish, what kind of, you know, park they were playing in. So they threw an extra million on top just to make sure they get it. And then, as you say, Triller come in from sideways and fucking put $6 million on the table. Just absolute mental. Where's the money coming from? You know, they reckon that they've got 250 million downloads, or that's been heavily contested. They reckon they've raised 100 million from banks because of the potential growth of the brand and everything else. So it is mad. When you get deep into it, you're kind of like, what the fuck does this mean for boxing? Which direction is it going in? And, you know, how are they going to get any returns on that in an audience that, as you said, probably doesn't even know who Teofimo is? Never mind fucking Cambosis Jr. And I think that's the only logical step, you know, is to do Jake Paul versus Ben Askren or whatever it may be, the former UFC fighter, stick that on there to see if they can get Tyson back again. You know, there was a lot of talk of fucking Glenn McCrory fighting Evander Holyfield over there. So both those guys are clearly interested. And is that where we're going? Because for me, it's people like Teofimo, it's people like Ryan Garcia, it's people like Canelo Alvarez. These are our core champions. These are the guys that are placed to put this shit to bed. You know, if if Teofimo and Ryan Garcia and get the proper exposure and the headline acts they deserve, then boxing fans and even new young boxing fans will gravitate towards them and go, that's where my spotlight is. This is what boxing actually is. It's not Mike Tyson fighting Roy Jones and they're both fucking combined age of 110. It's over here. Ryan Garcia is the future of boxing. Teofimo is the future of boxing. So it's interesting that Chiller aren't fucking about with the OAPs necessarily. Is there a long-term strategy that they are actually in boxing for the long haul?
Yeah. And the Regis Progress one is even more interesting. To bring him over, again, another young guy, cool guy, you know what I mean, who's quite in on the entertainment scene. He's got good connections and friends in that world. For it to bring him over, to stick him as what you would class as a real boxing fight on the undercard of this Jake Paul fight on April 17th, I think it is. That one's also interesting. I think there is a long-term goal here. I think the Triller dudes have obviously seen the potential of a Teofimo Lopez-Ryan Garcia fight. They've seen it. Yeah. They've looked at it and they've gone, got a kid over here with 8 million followers on Instagram, and this is the real guy over here who's not got that social media following. We need to build this kid's social media following. I guarantee, right, Teofimo comes away with at least double the audience. He goes over 1 million Instagram followers off the back of this fight. Oh, yeah. At least, maybe even more. And that's where we're at right now. People will be shaking their heads going, oh, the fucking game's gone. The game's gone. No, mate, listen, get up to speed. I've had so many interactions recently with people that have just been moaning at me about my angle and understanding of where the game is currently at. We don't have to agree and like where the game's currently at, but you need to understand it, otherwise you're going to get left behind. It is being driven by social media. People's attention spans are dwindling. We will speak extensively on the UFC show about what happened at the weekend and why Dana White said what he did about Cyril Gane. People's attention spans are going. They're small now. You need to when you get your chance in the spotlight, you need to take your chance in the spotlight. You need to send that viral moment around the world in order to build your brand. We spoke about Josh Kelly, didn't we, and David Avanesian a couple of weeks ago, and whether it was right or whether it was wrong, and whether he should be building this or whether he should be building that, Josh Kelly, and what fights he should be taking. No, listen, that attitude has gone now. It's the right attitude for the fighter. There's no doubt about that, to build yourself up to a place where you should be ready for a fight. And that might take 20, might take 30 fights. And every boxing head is nodding away right now. Yes, that's the right way of going about it. But when you step away from boxing and look into the real world, that attitude gets you left behind. Because everybody else is moving at a far quicker speed. Far quicker speed. And you need to be up to that speed in order to cut through and to break through. So it makes a perfect amount of sense for Teofimo Lopez to go and, one, get paid a ridiculous amount of money, and two, use a platform in order to build that social presence, because that is going to be key for him. As a young man now, what is he, 23, 24 years of age, that growth in that social platform is going to be key for his career over the next 4 to 5 years. It needs to be bigger than it already is. And right now, boxing isn't doing it for him.
No.
But I'm worried, and this is where my worry is, from his point of view, I'm worried that we might find ourselves with Teofimo Lopez like we found with Mikey Garcia a couple of years ago, because he's stepping away from his promoter, who he's under contract with at the moment, Top Rank. He's stepping off that ESPN platform to go and fight on this Triller platform, right? Now, he's contracted with Top Rank. He's getting paid, giving away all his... Forget when you take away all the deductions and the splits and all that type of stuff, he's going to get paid best part of 3 to 3.5 million quid for this mandatory challenge, right? So that is now his benchmark. That's his entry fee. He's coming in at 3.5 million quid. That's his minimum now. That's what you've got to pay him to get out of bed to go to fight. When you're paying for a bigger fight, like a Josh Taylor or a Ramirez or a Haney or a whoever it may be,
Garcia,
you're talking an extra million, an extra 2 million, an extra 3 million on that, maybe even more. So his entry level is 3.5 million quid. Now, the reason why we ended up at Purse Bids is because he told Top Rank to go and jog on, because they said that they're going to pay him his contract minimum for a title defense at 1.25. Top Rank have just bid 2.3 for this particular fight. So they weren't prepared to go any further with it.
No.
When he fights George Kambosos, and I anticipate that he wins, and he comes back, and his next fight is something really meaningful and juicy and sexy, Top Rank have to be at 3.5 million just to start the negotiation.
Of course.
If they're not at 3.5 million, then Teofimo has to have maybe a different goal in his head in order to make this fight happen. Whether it is, okay, there's an opportunity here to become undisputed at a second weight. Maybe I'll take less money just because the goal is bigger. I don't know. There has to be some compromise in that conversation. And I think the compromise more so is on Top Rank's part than it is Teofimo's part. Now, if there is no compromise, we've seen it in the past with Top Rank and Bob. He just goes, well, you can sit on the sidelines and wait, mate. You're not going anywhere. You can't go anywhere. Job done. And we saw it with Mikey Garcia. The last thing I want for Teofimo Lopez, as talented as he is, as young as he is, and as go-getting he is right now, I really fear that after this fight, we are going to see him on the sidelines in a legal battle. That's where I think this is going.
Yeah. The good thing is, though, again, just coming back to Triller, if they've got a long-term goal with this, if we can see this coming, if we can see this issue on the horizon, then you better believe other people can see it coming on the horizon as well. And I think at this point in time, Teofimo is doing Teofimo, and that's what every fighter should do.
Yeah,
do absolutely. It's not your job to keep the people at Top Rank employed. It's not your job to keep the people at Matchroom employed. Your job is to make as much money as possible, build the biggest legacy as possible, and get the fuck out with all your faculties intact. That's every boxer's dream and goal, and only that should be their number one focus. And I think Team Teofimo, maybe even with Triller, the money he's earning now, he's got his own fucking sports lawyers, he's got his own personal advisors who will see this coming and go, this is the solution. We go with Triller, we do this. If Top Rank try and put you on the shelf, Triller are going to bankroll, or XYZ is how we're going to bankroll you're coming away from Top Rank. Like Floyd did it. Floyd bought his contract out, cost him 750 grand. Best 750 grand he's ever spent, because he fucking made a billion on the back of it, being independent. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like Canelo now, that's the future. You know, if you want to make the kind of money that Floyd made, or build that kind of legacy, or come away from the sport with absolutely bonkers money, you can't afford to be tied to one promoter. Certainly Top Rank, who have been very vocal, and that's what surprised me, how vocal Bob has been. Of like, he's almost like, listen, he's not worth it, so fuck him. And yeah, if someone wants to pay him that sound, but he's not going anywhere because he's a Top Rank fighter. There's also the Muhammad Ali Act, which is in place in America to protect fighters from sitting on the fence. Now, again, as you say, it happened to Mikey Garcia, and it's happened to many other fighters. But I just think you can see that coming on the horizon. I think Teofimo and his team will have a plan in place to move forward, either to go back to Top Rank and go, right, guys, I'm the fucking golden goose around here. Because, we know how Teofimo was made. It was made on the fact that Bob and everybody else at Top Rank thought Lomachenko would make easy work of him. And Teofimo fucking he backed himself, and it blew up in their faces. And then even in the aftermath, even now, ask Bob about a rematch with Lomachenko and watch him get a hard on. You know what I mean? Bob is still all in on Loma. And yet, they don't seem to recognize the fact that Teofimo is the future of Top Rank. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that you've got for the next 10 years that could move through the weight divisions. That's a fucking absolute superstar, but they just don't seem to, for whatever reason, they've not really embraced him. And if they've not done it now, they're never going to do it. And I think Teofimo needs to get out of there. And I think he's doing the right thing. Just on the Triller note as well, like that, I'm in a group on Facebook, and because it's full of old men, and it's like a British ex-boxers chat room basically on Facebook, where people put pictures up of fighters from their 80s and 90s and reminisce and all that. And it's just old men who don't know how to use proper social media on Facebook, saying, and this is the common thread. Here's a picture of, you know, such and such from the, wow, what a fighter he was. You know, boxing's not the same now. Remember in the 80s, he was on the BBC all the time, or ITV in the 80s. That was the golden era. Yeah, boxing's never been the same since. Now, what happened was, in the 90s, something called Sky Sports got launched. And Sky Sports basically put bigger purses on the table to move the boxing over to satellite channels. And now what we're seeing is the current version of that with Triller, with The Zone, your Netflix and everything else. You're now seeing big fights gravitate over to the next, the future of home entertainment. It was terrestrial TV. Then in the 90s, it became satellite TV. And now in the 2010s, it's about to become streaming TV, Wi-Fi TV, if you like, whatever you want to call it, whatever the correct term is. We can't reject it. We can't go, oh, what the fuck's he going to Triller for? Wow, that fight's on the zone. What the fuck? Mate, you've got to embrace it. It is what it is. This is boxing's future. Triller and the zone can't come in necessarily and go, boom. Yeah, we'll have Premier League rights. We're in the conversation for Premier League rights because that's billions. Boxing's low-hanging fruit in terms of sports entertainment because you can go in and go, oh, that's gone to purse bids. Go ahead, yeah, £6 million. We'll have the best lightweight on the planet. Thank you very much. We'll do a one-off event. But boxing suits itself to become the first step towards this next age of television or home entertainment. So we just need to embrace it, man, and fucking run with it. And it is what it is. And I'm buzzing for Teofimo because he's a top lad. I'm glad he's getting paid. I do believe he deserves every cent of that money. Yeah. And if this means that Ryan Garcia versus Teofimo is going to happen by the end of the year and it's going to be on Triller and fucking Snoop's going to be commentating, then Jesus Christ, we can all fucking crack one off.
Snoop has to be on comms for this fight, doesn't he? He has to be on, mate. If they don't have Snoop on comms, I'm not watching it. It has to happen. But you're right. Everything that you've said there's too many old heads in boxing. There's too many people saying, oh, well, this is the way it's always been. Doesn't mean it's right. The game's changed. The world's changed. You need to get on board or you're going to get left behind. And there's too many people. And I'm not saying fans. Fans are on board. I think fans are savvy to it. There's too many people that are working inside boxing that are like, oh, whoa, what's going on? What's going on? They're frightened of it. They're frightened of that change. Come on, man. Get on fucking board. Change your skill sets. Learn some new shit because it's moving at a rate. Nick Peake's collecting the fucking tickets. We're driving the train, boy. Let's go. Speaking of driving the train, Clarissa Shields. That's the first fight that I'm talking about this weekend. She's fighting Friday night. History maker, this kid, mate. I mean, loads of people maybe look at her and her attitude and the way she is so brash, gets people's backs up. Fuck off. Clarissa Shields is unbelievable, especially for the female game. What is she, 20? Five, is she? She's mid-20s. Mid-20s, right? And she's already announced that she's having a go at mixed martial arts, which we absolutely love. Fuck it. Get in there. Go on, girl. Go and try and do shit that nobody else has done. She's a proper, proper trailblazer. And this weekend, in a boxing match, she could become the first fighter in the four-belt era to become undisputed in two weight classes. Two weight classes. That is unbelievable. And also, it's quite a historic card this Friday because it's all female. It's an all-female card. It's on Fight TV, I think. But if Clarissa Shields can pick up this IBF belt at the weekend against undefeated fighter in Eve-Marie Decaire, she'll become the first of the four-belt era. She's a groundbreaker, man. And we've spoken to her on many occasions, stuck microphones in her face. She's rock star shit. She is the GWOT. That's where we're at right now. That's where we're at. And I can't wait to see her do a thing this weekend. And I hope that she gets to achieve it because she's grafting, man. She's in there working with Johnny Bones John. So she's grafting. She's doing her thing, isn't she?
She should be a superstar. You know, she's a two-time Olympic gold medalist. She's that documentary that's on Amazon or Netflix or wherever it is about her when she's living in Flint, Michigan, and she's fucking basically washing cars and shit to pay for their tickets to London 2012, and she's, you know, you see her in her bedroom and she hasn't even got a sheet on her mattress. You know, she's living in squalor, you know, she's living and that part of Flint, Michigan, you know, there's parts there that I don't know where it's like now, but I know at the time, no running water and fucking all kinds, absolutely horrific conditions. And yet, you know, she emerged from that to become the poster girl of female Olympians for the whole of the USA. And you know, the fact that she isn't a bigger star is a travesty. And I know one of the reasons why, one of the big reasons why, and here we go again, let's get my big fucking drum out. Clarissa Shields is 10-0 as a pro. Her opponent this weekend, Marie-Eve Decaire, the Canadian girl, is 17-0 as a pro. Yeah. This is a unification fight for all the belts at super welterweight. Massive, massive fight.
Yeah.
Combined, that's 27 wins, 0 losses. They've got 2 knockouts. Marie has never knocked anyone out.
Yeah.
Clarissa Shields, for as sensational as she is, has only got 2 knockouts in 10 straight wins. When the fuck are we going to wake up? When the fuck are we going to start banging a drum and forcing change? That women boxers must compete over 3 minutes. 10 2-minutes is not 2 minute rounds is a joke. The good thing is I had an interview with Chantelle Cameron this week, and Chantelle Cameron, she's at the front of the queue banging the drum. She's tossing the baton and everything else. She is fully on board for 3 minute rounds. And she says, every single fighter I've ever spoken to, every female says the same thing. We need 3 minute rounds to showcase what we can do. It's too easy to survive for 120 seconds. You need 3 minute rounds in women's boxing to turn these girls into superstars. And you show me the only people against it, the only people against 3 minute rounds, I'm telling you now, are fucking men who have been in boxing for a long time and are over the age of 50. That's a fact. That is a fucking fact. It's the same familiar old hacks and boxing trainers and officials from these governing bodies. They're over 50 and they're saying they're all the same. Oh, no, we need to fucking protect the girls. You're the same motherfucker that 20 years ago didn't want women to box, you gobshite. Women should do 3 minute rounds. Get these fuckers out the sport. We're moving forward.
Get them on, baby. I'm in. Fingers crossed, Clarissa Shields. Listen, it's a great fight, but Clarissa Shields for me is the rock star. I'm not gonna do that journalistic thing where I'm going, oh yeah, nice fight. I don't know who's gonna win all this. Nah, man, I want Clarissa Shields to win because she's a rock star. She's mouthy and she'll push the game forward. So fingers crossed, she gets the job done on Friday night. Speeding is into Saturday. It was supposed to be the rematch between Dillian and Povetkin, as we told you a couple of weeks back. It's all been pushed now to March the 27th. That's happening in Gibraltar. But the card goes on this weekend, which we're excited about. And what a wonderful opportunity for an old mate of ours, a guy that's been on our podcast on a couple of occasions, very softly spoken, not necessarily forthcoming with the media. But he's a top kid, top fighter as well. And he used to train Nicholas. It is, of course, JJ Metcalf fighting this weekend for the British Super Welterweight title against Ted Cheeseman. Now, there'll be loads of people listening to this podcast that know who Ted Cheeseman is. They've seen Ted Cheeseman fight. The Ted Cheeseman fans, they're on board. You know what you're getting with Ted Cheeseman. But JJ Metcalf's most certainly gone under that radar. He's not probably caught your attention. You're not probably on board with JJ. This is his chance now. This is his chance. He's top of the bill. Saturday night, Ted Cheeseman. Obviously, JJ is undefeated through 21 fights. Ted Cheeseman, we know of a couple of defeats that he's suffered, but he's most certainly there at British level, no question about that. This is it now, JJ, son. You want the breakout moment? Go and get the breakout moment. I think it's a great fight. I think it's great matchmaking. I'm delighted that it's continued for this particular card. I think it stands alone in itself as a British title fight. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm also looking forward to a couple of others on the card, but in particular this one, because I think this could be JJ's moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be, you know, and it is a tough fight, as you say. Ted Cheeseman's absolutely no joke, and JJ will feel like very much like the away fighter in there. Surprisingly, as far as I know, JJ is still a Commonwealth champion, so I don't know why this is not for both the British and the Commonwealth. I know this is a vacant British title fight, but why the British and the Commonwealth's not on there, I'm not too sure. But yeah, man, I've known JJ an awful long time. And as you say, back in 2008, he gave me two black eyes in a sparring session down at the Solly. He was novice. He was in the novice ABA.
He was only 12.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Telling you. He was in the novice ABAs that year, and I'm sure, I don't know whether it was that year or the following year, he lost to Shane McGuigan in the finals, I think it was, of the novice ABAs. But I was sparring JJ because I was doing a charity thing. I was doing a few rounds with his dad to raise money for charity. So I was getting in shape and doing some sparring. And to be fair, you know, Shane Neary is a fucking legend, especially in Liverpool. And I've talked about that fight before. I'll have to put it on our YouTube. It is funny looking back now. But his dad obviously completely managed the fight from start to finish. But obviously JJ was just a young teenager then. He was, you know, as I say, going into the novice ABAs and was still very much finding himself as a boxer. So when I sparred him, I was, you know, a fucking man in my 30s. So JJ never held back. He just knocked fuck out of me, obviously, because he's got his own agenda. So yeah, he cracked me on the nose and gave me two black eyes. So I'll always be a huge JJ Metcalf fan. obviously, I'm completely biased this weekend. Of course, I want him to do a number on Ted Cheeseman. But to be fair, Ted Cheeseman, when it's all said and done, Ted, for all the talk and everything, Ted Cheeseman, you can't not like the kid. The story he's had serious addiction problems and everything else. And you know, I feel for anyone like that that's fighting their own inner demons and everything else. I want nothing but good things for Ted Cheeseman. But what I like about this fight is, for all the advances that they've made, for all the technical growth that they've both got, these are throwback lads. The throwback fighters, man. These are like guys who just fucking love to get in there, bite down on the gum shield, curl their toes into that canvas and let the hands go. And for that, I think it's going to be something a little bit special. I think, you know, they'll start with all of the best intentions of having game plans and everything else. But I think at some stage, they're just going to have to stand, trade heavy leather, and it'll be about who wants it most. And just look out for those Metcalf body shots. But yeah, man, I think it's going to be a cracker.
Mm. Also a cracker, undefeated these two lads, Chris Congo taking on Michael McKinson. I think this is a belter, a real good fight. Yep. Again, we've got to keep commending the guys at Matchroom, matchmaking, whoever's putting these fights together, fair play, and obviously kudos to the fighters for getting in there and doing their thing. But this is a real good fight. And I would like to see the winner of this take on Florian Marcoux. That's the direction that I would like that to go. But this fight's a belter.
It's a great fight. No, really good fight. And as you said, we talked about it last week. The Marcoux fighting the winner would be absolutely perfect. But I even like Fabio Wardley's on this card as well. And you know, this is a heavyweight who's got, you know, massive potential, not a ton of experience. You know, I don't think he's going to add out any amateur career of note. But he had that big win over Simon Vallely, had the stoppage over Larty last time out. And I think Eric Molina, you know, it's a former Anthony Joshua opponent.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good step up. It's the right opponent at the right time. I think it's a good card, man. And I'm super, obviously, we've got it. We can't move on without talking about Campbell Hatton, man. Hurricane Hatton. Cannot wait to see Campbell in there. And I'm kind of, I've got to be honest, if he does that little Ricky step to the side, throw body shot down the middle move, oh man.
That's all I want to hear.
Honestly,
that's all I want to hear.
If I had hair on me balls, then it would be tingling and standing on edge if he does that. But obviously, courtesy of Manscaped, I haven't got any hairs on me balls these days. But I'm super excited to see Campbell Hatton. I hope he walks out to Blue Moon.
Yeah.
But I've got a feeling he might do his own thing.
Come out to some Oasis number or something. Listen, it's a good one. Like we've got three fights there, the heavyweight, the welterweight, and the super welterweight fights. Great matchmaking. I don't think you're going to be bored. There's going to be some talking points coming off the back of that. There's some good ones in there. And obviously Campbell Hatton's debut, which is a good one. Youssef Kumari is also on this card against Cain Barker. But I fully anticipate Youssef to come through there. That's probably the easiest out of all the fights. And obviously, Campbell Hatton taking on TBA should be solid as well. But the heavyweight, the welterweight, and the super welterweight fights should be good ones. And as I said on Friday night, Clarissa Shields is in action. So fingers crossed, next week's show will be far more remarkable than this week's show when it comes to talking about the weekend's action, because it didn't live up to all our expectations, did it? Thank you very much for listening to us. It's been an absolute pleasure once again. What are you doing, shadow boxing? What are you doing?
I'm just doing a bit of shadow because I'm waiting for the phone call to be Tommy Fury's next opponent.
No need.
I'm 0-0 as a pro. I'm ready to go. I'm 0-0. I'm ready to go.
Just on that, because I've seen loads of people giving him shit, right? He's at that.
Not Tommy's fault.
No, it's not Tommy's fault. It's nobody's fault. I think it's sound. It wasn't supposed to be the top of the bill. It wasn't supposed to be that. There was supposed to be a world title fight. There was supposed to be a British title fight. And Tommy Fury was supposed to be in there, well down the card, coming through, learning his thing. Then all of a sudden, it's top of the bill and you've got to fight who you've got to fight. You can't chuck him in there with someone half decent at this particular time, can you? What's he had? Three fights? Four fights? Nah, mate, I'm cool. I'm cool with him knocking over a 0-9. For now. For now. Listen, thank you very much for listening to us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Once again, doing the podcast, you can get us on iTunes. Please subscribe there. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. If you would love to write us a five-star review, we would be forever grateful. It just helps with our visibility in the charts. You can get Android feeds on our website, fightdisciples.com, and everything else that you need is on that website. We've got a UFC show as well out today, so go and listen to that if you haven't already listened to it. Thank you very much for listening to us. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.